Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. Tonight we had scheduled a discussion of immigration and safety, and that program was going to be rescheduled to a later date. As a state of emergency has been declared in California due to what's becoming a far too frequent phenomenon, a devastating series of wildfires. But this year's fires brought forth a new complexity. More and more insurance companies are declining to renew policies in areas that they consider to be an unreasonable risk. In such communities as Pacific Palisades or Altadena, there's a high rate of homes that have been damaged or destroyed, where the insurer is claiming to no longer cover. When people facing catastrophes after losing their house to a wildfire or flood, or perhaps suffer major injuries after an accident, what do you do? Where do you go if there's a question of whether they are truly covered? Maybe there's a question of whether a policy is in effect or whether a policy applied to this kind of event. Tonight, we look at issues surrounding insurance coverage and the litigation that results from asserting that someone is or is not insured. Questions regarding insurance coverage or insurance law or insurance claims, especially property, give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, our attorney guest cannot give you specific legal advice without all of the salient facts of your situation. But we're happy to be here. We're happy to share the legal principles to help guide your decision-making, perhaps give you the place to go, and direct you to where you can get some help. You can contact us with any questions of insurance law, coverage law. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. And to guide us through this explanation of insurance coverage and insurance claims, Tiburon attorney Kathleen DeFever is both an insurance adjuster and an insurance litigator with extensive experience and knowledge about insurance claims, the insurance market, and the experience of the insurance consumer. Ms. DeFever is one of the few professionals in the United States who has worked both as an insurance adjuster and an insurance litigator, and is personally dedicated to the improvement of the consumer's experience with insurance. Having received her Master's of Insurance Law from the University of Connecticut School of Law, and the founder of the consumer insurance advisory firm Misinsured, Kathleen is in the process of obtaining her doctorate in insurance law from Ghent University in Belgium. I could go on, but let me cut it there and welcome you, Kathleen. Welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. It's nice to be here.
You know, let me hit you up with a couple of big questions before we get onto the more general. My insurer has declined to renew a policy, not due to what we've done, but because of where we are located in California, or perhaps the type of policy. My broker says there's really nobody that's licensed in California that'll cover this geographic area anymore. Can you explain what does this mean if they're talking about a broker that's not California licensed? Are they beyond the reach of California law? And what happens if I make a claim?
Well, it should be easy to find a broker with a California license. I think maybe the common issue that you're asking about is that insurance companies who are not licensed, they're called non-admitted insurers, have been offering coverage in California with increased frequency. They're allowed to offer coverage in California now because, as we all know, the traditional insurers, many of them have pulled out of the California market entirely, or they leave the market and then they come back, but only in certain areas. And so it's a lot more of an unstable environment. The difference between an admitted insurer and a non-admitted insurer is how they are screened by the Department of Insurance. Now, for the most part, they're treated the same way. They have to have they have to do the same things to receive permission to sell here. The major difference that you need to be aware of is they are not regulated for their solvency in the same way. So what this means is it's possible that an insurance company who's non-admitted, and that means they're going to be based in another U.S. state and not in California, but don't have the license to be here, they may not be capitalized as well as an admitted insurer. So what this means for the consumer is you should... If your broker tells you, well, I have a non-admitted, or they're also called surplus lines insurers sometimes, I have a non-admitted insurer who's willing to cover your property, get online, go to AM Best, their website. That is the ratings agency that determines how solvent, how reliable an insurance company is. And they use a grading system from, it's like, A through F, kind of like your grades in elementary school. It's possible to get an A++++, I think. So obviously that would be the best grade that you can get. You really don't want to dip below a B grade, because that means there might be questions about how solvent, how financially stable they are. But that's where you go to check if you're looking at an insurance company that's non-admitted.
So I make a claim, and I'm not happy with what the insurance company is offering or how they're performing with me. Does it do any good to file a complaint with the California Department of Insurance if you're dealing with an uncooperative insurance company? And if the answer is different for an admitted or non-admitted carrier, we would love to hear both.
You can make a complaint with the Department of Insurance. For either one. You're testing my memory, Jeff, because I feel like it used to be the case that the Department of Insurance would not look at the behaviors of non-admitted insurers, but I think they do now. I can get you an answer to that maybe by the end of our hour, but definitely call whether your insurer is admitted or non-admitted. And yes, the Department of Insurance is helpful, because what they do is they listen to your issue and they send a letter, an email to your insurance company and say, basically, what is going on here? We need a response from you. And the insurance company does have to answer them to let them know what their viewpoint is on the issue. Now, beyond that, the Department of Insurance doesn't offer much. So if you are still in a disagreement with your insurance company, then you will definitely need to find an insurance consumer attorney. But once in a while, it's an issue that the insurance department can actually help you resolve. So it's worth a try. I generally don't see that they can do a lot. You know, they have their limitations as well and their resources. And we all know that there are a lot of problems with insurance claims. So it's worth a try. And if it doesn't work, then you definitely need to call an insurance attorney.
But it sounds from your answer that there's no harm in calling. And if it's not something that they will get involved with, it sounds like they might help direct you to some resources. And certainly an insurance coverage attorney can direct you towards some resources, or perhaps jump in.
The Department of Insurance won't recommend attorneys to you, but you can go to the California Bar for certain, or a local bar association to get names. And of course, a good old Google search will give you people in your area that specialize in insurance. And there's also an organization that can help you find resources called United Policyholders, which is based in San Francisco. And they're very helpful with resources of all kinds. They can help you with public adjusters, with attorneys, with brokers, and they have a lot of information to help you get started on your claim as well.
And every county in California has a lawyer referral service. It may be through that local county bar, or as in the case of San Francisco and Marin, they're both through the Bar Association of San Francisco. You can reach the Lawyer Referral and Information Service at 415-989-1616. They will help you with San Francisco, but San Mateo, Alameda, Contra Costa, every county in the Bay Area has that there to assist you, to help you find the right attorney in your given area. So I've suffered a loss. Perhaps my house has burned down or has been seriously damaged. I'm starting to get letters. I mean, it's still smoldering, and I'm getting letters from the insurance companies or the insurance commissioners. I guess, should I listen to them? Should I settle quickly? Take advantage of what they're offering?
Definitely not. Settling quickly is never a good idea. You need to spend some time and contact some outside resources to find out if that's a good settlement or not. The problem with insurance and insurance claims, and as any consumer will notice, your policy is really complicated. There are a lot of clauses and exclusions and endorsements and these different terms that it's just difficult to know what it means. You can find something excluded in one part of your policy, and then at the end of your policy, there's a page added that says that actually it's covered because you opted for additional insurance for that item. And how to actually understand how these different clauses play off of one another is difficult. And just to understand the insurance terminology in the policy. So in my experience, an early settlement is never a good idea unless you have an experienced counselor look at it, because the insurance company knows your rights and you don't. The insurance company knows what you're actually entitled to, but you don't. And the insurance company does not have a financial interest in paying you your full benefits. They just don't. I mean, once in a while, if you have really low limits and your claim is much higher than what your limits are, the insurance company will pay you in full. But even then, there are clauses in the insurance policy that offer additional coverages that you may not know about. So you can look at your declarations page and it may say your house is covered for, let's throw a number out, let's say your house is covered for $400,000, and you find out after your house burns down that it was worth, that the rebuild's going to cost you $600,000. The insurance company says, oh, well, you've exceeded the limits. We'll give you $400,000. What you may not know is there's a clause in your insurance policy that says during the rebuild, you can get held back depreciation, or you can get, there are clauses that offer additional coverage. They call it extended limits, typically, where you can get 150% of that $300,000. It's so complicated. It is so easy for the insurance company to underpay you. You should always have someone look at it before you sign off on a what's called a global settlement, where you're completely done with the claim. You can leave hundreds of thousands of dollars on the table by accident.
And of course, someone with your experience, the clauses are familiar to you, so you know what each one of them mean. And therefore, you can look at it knowing what they all mean and how they interplay. Whereas to someone like myself who doesn't look at insurance policies that much, I'm learning the words in the policy, much less how they interact.
Yeah, well, there's also, you have to be experienced and understand how the terms are used. So even if you look the term up, and there is actually a dictionary just for insurance terms, even if you look it up and you understand it from that insurance law dictionary, you don't know how it's typically used. You don't know the common usage of the term. So sometimes what you read isn't necessarily going to lead to the result you think you will get. I had a client once who was certain that They were not entitled to a certain portion of their benefits. And this was a very sophisticated client who had legal training, actually, and sent it to me. And I looked at it and said, no, you are, I can see why you would say that, but you actually are entitled to those benefits because the way those terms are interpreted and the common usage over the years in the insurance industry is that you would be entitled. And we got him paid, and it was not a small amount of money. So absolutely have someone look at it.
There are reasons why in court we work with interpreters and don't rely on Google Translate.
Exactly. That's a great example.
So I mentioned before that I've suffered a loss. What's the first thing I should do?
Well, the first thing you should do is call your insurance company. If you don't remember who your insurance company is, call your broker, whatever it is that you can recollect. I know it's a terrible time. It's tragic, and you're undergoing so many other points of stress, you know, emotional, et cetera. But whatever it is that you can recollect, because your broker or your agent can also help you file a claim. You don't have to necessarily contact the insurance company directly, but file the claim. Do that first. And it's easy. You're just putting them on notice that you have a claim. They are going to send you a form that you fill out, but to trigger the claim filing, it's enough to call, and they will, you can trust them. They're going to write down that you called and that you have a loss. So that's the first thing that you do. Make sure, you know, you timestamp that. Do it as soon as you can.
In a moment, I want to shift gears a little bit and backtrack and talk about some of the things that maybe we should be doing before we suffer a loss. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're taking a look at insurance amidst catastrophic wildfires and an exodus of state-licensed insurance carriers. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topics. You want to talk about insurance coverage, insurance claims, or how you protect yourself ahead of time. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. So what are some of the things that I could do today so that if I suffer a loss later on, I can document what's there and what money I'm entitled to?
The thing I recommend as number one priority is photographs or video. It's very easy to take photos of the current state. If we're talking about property insurance, go around your house and just take photos of everything. You don't have to go to the extent of pulling every utensil out of your kitchen drawer and taking an individual photo, but it's very helpful even to have a photo of the inside of the drawer, because if you lose your house, imagine how difficult it would be to name all the utensils in that drawer from memory. I don't know about your utensil drawer, but mine's got at least 20 things in there, and I would never remember all of them. And that's just one example. Your closet, same thing. You don't have to pull every piece, every shirt off of the hanger and take a picture of it, but at least take a picture of the closet and get a few angles so that if you lose everything, you can look at those pictures and they can help you trigger your memory. That's the easiest thing you can do that will make a really big difference. Of course, you can get into a lot of other things that you can do, especially fire prevention things that you can do. But I would recommend that as the number one thing you can do easily. And then the other thing is to make sure that your coverage is appropriate, which that really is the meat, I think, of why we're talking tonight. it's really difficult now. It's very difficult to get sufficient coverage. It was already a little bit challenging before this onslaught of wildfires in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. And now with the insurers leaving the market, it's really difficult. I myself struggle, and I'm considered an expert in the field. I have a very difficult time getting everything fully insured. If you're in a high-risk wildfire zone, you will probably end up with the FAIR plan, which is the insurance that is managed by the Department of Insurance, well, by the state of California. The FAIR plan is, the coverages are not terrible. I mean, if you compare them to private policies, sometimes they're similar in their limits. But what you have to watch out with the FAIR plan is it excludes a lot more things. So the FAIR plan isn't going to cover a lot of specific things. Like, for example, under a normal insurance policy in the private market, your landscaping was covered. We call that the trees and shrubs and plants coverage, which seems insignificant, maybe, if you don't have a large yard, or you think, well, I lost my home, I don't care about the landscaping. But those amounts can add up to, you know, a good $70,000, depending on what kind of yard you have, et cetera. It's not covered at all. So that's already one piece that lowers your overall coverage. And there are others, there are other things that are excluded. And then the limits are lower, and it's difficult to get the limits up a little bit higher. So the personal property limits tend to be much lower than a traditional policy. Personal property limits are tied to how much you insure your house or your dwelling for, and they're keyed to each other. So if you increase your dwelling coverage, your personal property goes up, and you can't request to have them separately keyed. It's just the way the system has worked forever. But now the personal property is, I'm seeing numbers of, I don't know, maybe 1/5 of how much coverage you used to have under a private insurer is what you will get under the FAIR plan. And that's concerning, because it's very easy to underestimate how many belongings that you have. So there are a lot of portions of the FAIR plan you have to be careful with. Now, what you can do is get what's called a difference in conditions policy in order to supplement the FAIR plan and try to fill those holes, so to speak, to cover those gaps. But even those difference in conditions policies, still they have lower limits than what the traditional insurers were covering, and they still fail to cover certain things that you may really need. One thing I noticed recently is it used to be, this is another obscure one that you wouldn't know unless you ask for some advice, but and here's a piece of advice for people who have lost their home recently. You typically get coverage for any expenses that you incur when you're evacuating. And that's even if you didn't lose your house, typically you would be covered for the expenses of evacuation. You know, the hotel room and whatever necessities you need on an emergency basis, you could get covered even if you don't lose your house. Well, now not only is that disappearing in coverages, but they're capping it. I've seen where they cap it at, you know, $500, where previously it was something that you could basically get covered as needed. So lots of little things to look at, and it's very, very difficult to get fully covered. You really have to challenge your broker and ask them a lot of questions and make sure that you're maximizing whatever you can get that's offered.
You mentioned the FAIR plan. And that only relates to property. That's not necessarily for other types of insurance. But is the FAIR plan for property coverage roughly analogous to assigned risk for auto insurance? It's going to have limits. It's not going to have as much and as broad coverage. But it's there as a last resort for people that might not otherwise be able to get insurance.
Well, you could call it a last resort since that's what happens when you're looking in the private market. You can't find anything else. You end up with the FAIR plan. That is generally how people approach it. But it's not quite so bad. Last resort sounds quite desperate. The coverage isn't quite that bad. And I know in auto insurance, if you have a very bad driving record, you end up on very specific types of policies that are not as favorable as you would like. It's not analogous in that sense. It's still okay coverage. It's similar to what was being offered at the lower end of coverages in the last 5 years. That's still not good. It still results in most people being underinsured by at least 20% for what they need for the rebuild. But last resort, I mean, yes and no. Yes and no. And you can still probably find a very expensive non-admitted insurance policy, but those tend to be wildly more expensive than the FAIR plan. And of course, you have to balance what you're capable of paying for and whether that's even worth it. Because you can look at the non-admitted insurance policy, and it may not be much better than the FAIR plan, and it might cost 3 times more.
You mentioned about insurance companies leaving. Politically, is there anything that can be done to stop them? And perhaps more importantly, is there anything that could be done to stop the companies that are cherry picking, that are deciding they're not going to want to cover certain areas because they make more profit if they limit it to other areas or other property types?
Well, this falls under the authority of the Department of Insurance. So the Department of Insurance has the capability to monitor the market and regulate rates and regulate the requirements on how much of the market the insurance company needs to cover in order to be allowed to sell policies in California. Of course, that's a balancing act for them. And as we have seen recently, insurance companies didn't like the regulations and decided to just leave California. It's complicated, and there's a lot of you've got a lot of elements that you could spend your lifetime delving into because there's also reinsurance, which is called insurance for the insurance company. And the insurance companies that left California, some of them cited that they didn't believe that they were not they could not get appropriate reinsurance. And so that was the reason, because they have insurance to cover when they have large losses that they can't handle out of the money that they have on hand. So it gets really complicated really fast, and it's very difficult for persons like you and me who don't work at the Department of Insurance or aren't involved in government policy to follow and to understand. But the answer is the Department of Insurance has the power to regulate that and to encourage and make appropriate policies to make sure there are enough insurance companies offering us the proper coverage at good rates.
In your opinion, are they doing what they can?
In my opinion, no. I think insurance companies are very convincing and powerful. Obviously, they're extremely well funded. And I think they outmaneuver our Department of Insurance, and we really could use some more government resources in order to be able to regulate that market better.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco, Bay Area, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
So we talked a little bit, and you mentioned earlier about an insurance consumer attorney. What does an insurance consumer attorney do?
Insurance attorneys are split into, basically the easy way to describe this would be the attorneys who work for the insurance companies and the attorneys who work for the consumer, the policyholder. An insurance consumer attorney can help answer questions about policies. As we stated earlier, we discussed a little bit about policy language. They can help you settle a dispute with your insurance company. They can help you manage your claim with an insurance company. Now, a word of discretion, though, it's usually not advisable to hire an insurance consumer attorney to handle your claim because you have a specialty called a public insurance adjuster, and that's what they do. That is their specialty, is claims. So the way I like to put it is, if you have a problem with an ongoing claim, it is probably better to hire a public insurance adjuster to help you with the claim. If you have a problem in the law, so let's say, for example, your insurance company, in your claim, the insurance company sent you a letter and said, well, we don't have to pay you this, and here's a California law that says so, then you really need to call an attorney. The difficult part is knowing whether it's a claim problem or a legal problem, which is what I do, a lot of what I do for a living, quote unquote, is answer that question. And I answer that question for free. You can call me or contact me at Miss Insured. I can help you. I will for free tell you whether you need a lawyer or whether you need a public insurance adjuster. But generally, that is the cutoff. If you have a claim and you need help managing your claim, it's a public insurance adjuster. If you're having just a standstill with your insurance company and you cannot get them to listen to you or to pay you what you believe you're owed, then you probably need an insurance attorney, a consumer insurance attorney. But there's so much gray area there, as you can imagine, whether to know whether you need to actually spend more money on an attorney or not. And that's the other thing. Public insurance adjusters are a lot more affordable than insurance consumer attorneys. So it's another reason, if you think it's just a small claim dispute, or you have a claim you just need some advice on, I would say a public insurance adjuster is a better idea.
You mentioned insurance consumer attorneys, but you also talked about insurance attorney. Are there insurance attorneys whose practice are limited to coverage?
Jeff, I'm going to have to ask for a follow-up clarification. Coverage as opposed to what?
Maybe as opposed to determining their insured's liability, people that, to the contrary, just specify on, is insurance in place? Is this property covered? Is this automobile covered?
Oh, I see what you're asking. Generally, consumer insurance attorneys will be able to do either one. If it's insurance liability, sometimes it's definitely okay to use a personal injury attorney. So let's say you're in a car accident and your insurance company does not want to pay fully for the damages to your car or your personal injury that you experienced as a result of that car accident. Probably the personal injury attorney can handle that because it's insurance falling under personal injury umbrella. So that wouldn't necessarily be a coverage question. Your insurance company is not arguing you're not covered. They just don't want to pay you the full amount. And it's a liability question. I'm sorry, this is a complicated answer. But I think maybe the best way to describe it would be, if you're in a dispute with your insurance company over what the policy says or what the insurance laws say, and that will determine whether you're paid or not, then you definitely need an insurance consumer attorney. if it just happens to be that insurance touches a claim that you have for an injury or in an auto accident, then you're probably okay and you don't need someone who specializes in, as you're saying, Jeff, the coverage questions. I hope that helps. It's complicated.
It's complicated because those two issues are often so intertwined.
Right.
Our first caller is out of San Francisco. Let me turn it over to Chin Lo. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thank you for taking the call.
No, thank you for joining us. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. So I have a friend that is setting up a phone room with people from out of the country as we speak to make insurance claims. And I told him not to do that, but he says he can make a lot of money. If he gets caught, what is he looking at? Is that a criminal thing? I mean, I'm guessing it is more than but he's like, he wants to call the insurance companies and make a bunch of claims and thinks he can collect a bunch of money.
Is he looking at people calling him with claims and then he's going to help them call? Or is he looking at manufacturing claims that maybe you're not necessarily accurate?
I think probably the second one.
Well, Jeff, our host, Jeff Hayden, is a criminal defense attorney. He might want to answer that question.
I would agree, don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
State law has very specific statutes about false insurance claims and insurance fraud. Federal law has specific statutes that talk about using the telephone or the wire or the mail to commit fraud. Either way, you could be looking, or your friend could be looking for at a world of hurt. It's probably a very bad
idea.
What
I was going to ask, I know it's against the law, so I was just going to say, if he does do it and they're on to him and he runs off to Hong Kong or Taipei or something like that, will they extradite him for that or no?
I can't cross the line and tell somebody where they can go to. Suffice it to say that most countries in the world cooperate with Interpol. Most places in the world would extradite if the felony warrant is processed.
See, I told you.
That you did.
Oh, well, okay. And insurance companies are very good at discovering patterns. So it's not a good idea because the patterns are discovered and the insurance companies cooperate with authorities and the insurance department catches those all the time. If you're on their email list, they uncover schemes like that all the time. They're very good at it. So it's definitely not advisable.
I can't get away with anything anymore. That's just how it is. So, thank you.
The government has a vested interest in making sure that the insurance market is strong to the extent that it's protecting consumers. So they will be diligent at assisting to conduct those investigations. Again, a course of conduct I don't recommend. You still have a few more minutes. This is Your Legal Rights. You still have a few minutes to call us up. Tonight we're talking about insurance and particularly insurance claims. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. And you can ask us any questions about insurance, insurance claims, insurance coverage. You're not limited to what we are discussing at the moment. And one type of claim we haven't talked about much is earthquake insurance. Has that market changed? Are there lots of people offering it now, or is it still somewhat limited?
I don't think that market's going to expand rapidly because the longer it takes for what they call the big one to arrive, and I don't, I'm not a seismologist or what geologist. I have no idea if that's even going to happen. But I think the insurance market's viewpoint on that is that the longer that takes, for the pressure under the Earth's core to release, the more dangerous it is to be covering too many, to be having too many earthquake insurance policies. They have to be very careful to spread the risk so that they aren't too concentrated in one area. And that's why it appears that the market seems limited. It's never a good idea for an insurance company to insure too many things in one area, because then you see that they have a loss and it's too expensive, which you can also see in the wildfires that we've been having.
Now, my next question, you may have already hit on it, but you know, with any claim, issues such as causation or whose fault it is might come up. But in what types of claims is it likely that coverage itself is going to be a question that they're going to challenge?
Those questions, those claims arise when there's a misinterpretation or a disagreement on what the policy language says. So, for example, someone might have, you know, a good argument that the hot tub they had in the backyard was covered. And hot tubs are not mentioned in your policy, not at all. They're not excluded. They're not specifically included. And so same thing with swimming pools, they aren't necessarily mentioned at all. So it's just a nice, easy example of something where the insurance company will say, well, we don't cover that. It's not in your coverage. And you can look at your policy and say, yeah, but it's not excluded in my coverage either. How do you know that's not covered? And that's how you get into a dispute where you might need some help interpreting what the coverage actually is. And then that could apply in other types of insurance as well. It's usually an interpretation issue that becomes the coverage dispute, interpretation of those terms, which we discussed earlier. If you don't have a knowledge of the law and the case law and the way the terms are typically used as terms of art in the insurance industry, you won't know your rights. You won't know if it should be covered or not.
You know, we hear these commercials on radio, not as much on television, about the personal injuries on our attorneys, and aren't they always the best person to fight for me?
For personal injury, they're generally quite adept at covering, at understanding that portion of your insurance. So whether it depends on where your insurance is coming from. So if you're in like I said earlier, a car accident, and you're injured, then the coverage probably comes from your auto policy. But if you get in a fight with someone in the street or in a bar, or something like this, you have to look at what your coverage is. Now, you have liability coverage in your homeowner's policy, and you could possibly get coverage for injuries under your homeowner's policy, depending. Now, these really vary. Typically, they cover if someone's injured on your property, but there are policies that cover injuries around the world, depending on how it's written. That might be something that's a little more complex and harder for a personal injury attorney to understand whether you're covered or not. So again, the answer is complicated. I apologize, Jeff. I'm giving you so many answers of it's complicated, but it really is. That's why we need insurance experts. And you know, it's a lifelong endeavor for those of us who are in the industry because it's so complicated. And here, I'll give you a fun theory that I have. I think it's complicated on purpose, because if the insurance company can make it complicated and then manipulate the language against you and you don't know your rights, then they get to keep your money. So here's an example of why I believe this so strongly. I also do some research in Europe on their insurance law systems. And there are rules, there are regulations in different countries that insurance coverage language must be simple, must be simple. And I've looked at some of those policies, and they're way simpler than American policies. They're much easier to understand. So we could do some work. Our insurance policies are Frankenstein policies that have been cobbled together for decades upon decades, and they're very hard to understand without a degree in doing so.
But the truth is, the insurance industry is a very powerful special interest.
It is indeed. And they're very good at keeping the system the way that it is because they believe that it benefits them.
And that's not necessarily to say they're bad or evil, but they do have their own interests and they have a lot of influence.
They do. They absolutely do. I read somewhere once that they hold more than half of all of the investment. I can't remember the term, but all of the bank held assets in the United States. I mean, that's a lot of money. That's a huge chunk of our economy. They're extremely powerful because they take your premium money and they put it in what's called a float, and they hang on to it. They reinvest it. They have a lot of money just sitting for reinvestment, and they make a lot of profit, as you can imagine, on this model. So yeah, they're extremely powerful. And Jeff, we could probably have a whole separate conversation about what that does to our political system and whether how much impact that has on whether you're getting good representation and protection from your government representatives. That's a real problem in the United States.
I did get a call from somebody who does not want to be heard on the air, wondering what happens if their house burned down recently and the insurance company's taken the position that the house isn't covered because of a late payment.
Wait, can you repeat the question? I'm sorry.
What if someone's house burned down recently and the insurance company takes the position that because of a late payment, there's no coverage?
Ah, okay. Well, one late payment doesn't negate your coverage, and there are regulations about this. I don't remember off the top of my head where that comes from, but there's a grace period for late payments. So if you're in a situation where your insurance company says, oh, you're late, and it's only one payment, then you definitely should contest that. I would contact the Department of Insurance about that first. And if you don't get anywhere, contact a consumer insurance attorney, because there is a grace period for absolute certain. The question I'm getting a lot lately is, what do I do? I got the letter that says that I got the non-renewal letter that says that my insurance won't be renewed. And people tend to, even the letters sometimes are a bit complex, and they tend to panic. When does that mean my insurance expires? Well, there is a California regulation that you have 75 days. You have a minimum of 75 days of coverage after that letter. I believe it triggers from the date the letter is the date on the letter. Then you have a minimum of 75 days from that date to procure new coverage. So if you get that letter, don't panic. It doesn't mean your coverage expires, the day you got the letter or the next day. California's been pretty reasonable about that. 75 days is pretty good. Other states only allow 30 days, which you can imagine in the market we're in, that would be very difficult to find new coverage in 30 days.
Although the insurance company that's on top of their game will simply have it earmarked to go out just over 75 days before your policy lapse, before your policy would expire.
Well, it used to be that they would not non-renew you. I mean, basically that's cancellation, until the end of your policy term. So if you buy a policy on August 1st, you should have until August 1st of the next year, and your policy is valid that entire year. But they've been getting, you see these situations where they make a top-down decision where the insurance executives decide they're pulling out of the state entirely. So you may get a letter that says, actually, you don't get the full year, even though that's what your contract said. And then you only get the 75 days. So it's changed a lot.
these premiums, as you know, are getting to be very expensive. What danger is it for someone who fudges on the application a little bit, maybe takes some liberties with the truth?
Well, I don't think that would help with the premiums in the first place. If you say something dishonest on your insurance application, first of all, that can negate everything. So you'll have a loss and they'll notice that you said something. It could even be small, that's not accurate. And you just have no coverage whatsoever. And they won't give your premiums back. So that really wasn't a wise course of action. But saying something inaccurate isn't helpful because it's hard enough to get full coverage. If you are saying something inaccurate to try to get a cheaper premium rate, you're also going to get not enough coverage. It really is just not helpful in any way. The bigger concern is most people, in order to keep their premiums low, are buying coverage that does not allow them nearly enough money to recover, especially with property claims. It's wise to actually pay those premiums, even though they're really, really high, especially in California.
Let me turn it to Alex in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, yes, thank you. My neighbor caused a fire in the apartment complex, which is government-owned and privately managed by a leasing company. The leasing company did allow us to file a claim and assign the claims adjuster. I had some damage, and I had to throw away a lot of stuff, which was damaged because of water and all that, chemicals. My question is, I don't have receipts for bulk of the stuff that I had to throw out. How do I claim for that? And two, I had to move out for a few months. Can I claim the time I had spent moving out, moving back in, and any other suggestions you might have?
Yeah, absolutely. So your coverage, I don't know what who your insurer is or where you received. Are you talking about renter's coverage?
No. The leasing company is willing to reimburse. It's their claims, their insurance company.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't be able to even guess then what's in their insurance coverage, but I can tell you what is generally covered in a typical policy. So first, to answer your question about no receipts, you can make claims for your personal property without receipts. You know, most people don't have them. And even if they did, they probably were damaged or disappeared in a fire or in a water damage. So insurance companies are used to no receipts being available. If you have any photographs, that's helpful. I said earlier
Yes, I have plenty.
Photographs are helpful. If you use whatever you have. And then the other way to approach it is be specific. So get online and find the closest equivalent of what you owned. So I don't know, let's say you had let's say it's an armchair that you had, and try to remember where you bought it and when. But if you really aren't sure, just find something similar online, and you can either print out the page of what that item is and submit it that way, or you can even send them a link to what the similar item is, because what they do is you're entitled to a similar replacement. So that's how you give them the level of detail they need to give you that reimbursement for that similar replacement. For your living expenses when you were displaced, you need to find
actually just
out.
Time. Hmm? Just time moving in, moving out. Like I spend days.
Hmm. Okay. Time isn't reimbursed, but there are ways to estimate what that cost you, such as, you know, well, first of all, the expenses of where you might have stayed, but also maybe your food costs were increased because you couldn't cook at home. So you can submit receipts to where you ate because you were forced to eat somewhere in a restaurant.
Hey, Alex, one question I have for you. You mentioned time a couple of times. Did you have to refrain from going to work because of what you were going through? Did you have some lost wages?
Yes, in part. But also, like, I use my weekends and holidays, you know, to move stuff and move back in. I timed it that way. So, yes, both ways.
They won't reimburse you for time, but you can try to recoup some of those losses through what I'm saying, the extra costs that you had, whether it's food or whether you spent more in gas money or whether you had to rent a vehicle to move the items. So think about all the extra costs that you might have expended that were unusual. And they might seem small, but they add up. So it's worth collecting the information on that.
Right. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Yeah, well, good luck. We're sorry to hear about the loss. I hope things are doing a little better for you now.
I hope this gave you some guidance, and thank you for joining us. And again, we're sorry for your loss. We're just about out of time, and I wanted to give you about a half a minute or so for any closing remarks that you might have.
Well, I think we covered it fairly well. My closing remarks would be, if you have a loss, don't assume you're being treated fairly because your insurance company is a private for-profit company that their interest in keeping your benefits is always going to be more important to them than paying your benefits in full. So even though, I mean, I've worked with some wonderful adjusters at insurance companies who really do care about the claimants, there are policies that they have to follow that will still result in you receiving fewer of your benefits. It's not their fault. Sometimes they're really nice people and they really want to help you out. But I guarantee if you don't do some research and get some advice, you will not get your full benefits. It's just the way the model works. It's just, the for-profit capitalistic model that we have for insurance in the United States. That would be my primary advice, Jeff. Of course, consumers need to be wary and they need to protect themselves. And I'm happy to answer questions that people have for free at any time. You can contact me. My website is misinsured.net.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights as we take a look at the current environment of insurance law. Our guest tonight has been Kathleen M. DeFever, DeFever Law in Timaron, and also Misinsured. Tonight's show was produced by yours truly. Please be sure to join Your Legal Rights again next week, Wednesday at 6, where we'll take a look at the new laws involved in labor and employment. Again, a big thanks to tonight's guest, and our thanks to all of you for joining us. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, and zealously guard your legal rights.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.